Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And we have our latest Brian Lehrer Show photography challenge going right now. We are asking you by this Wednesday to submit photos on the theme Change for the Better, Change for the Worse. That's Change for the Better, Change for the Worse. Maybe you'll show people dancing at your neighborhood bar, which we're about to talk about. But you can depict either or both as you see it around you. We'll make a slideshow of many of your submissions, and it will be shown at a photography event at McCarran Park in Williamsburg called the Slide Luck Pot Show. So get your photos in by Wednesday, and they may be up on the 30-foot screen at McCarran Park later this summer. Again, your photos on the theme Change for the Better, Change for the Worse. Depict either or both. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show to see the images that people have already posted and to upload yours. Now, it's been hailed as one of the great oddities of New York nightlife. You know, you go out for drinks with friends or you move to the beat at your favorite dive bar when suddenly a bartender or even a security guard comes by and says, "Hey, you can't dance here." The dancing ban, also known as the cabaret laws, have been heavily enforced in New York since the late 1990s. Unlicensed venues whose patrons move their feet or anything else suffer steep fines and sometimes get shut down. But now City Hall is taking another look at these laws and is considering giving New Yorkers a chance to dance once again. John McGarvey is the spokesman for Metropolis in Motion, a group that advocates the right for New Yorkers to get their groove on. And Paul Chevigny is an NYU law school professor, also with us. He's the author of Jazz and the Cabaret Laws in New York City. So Paul and John, welcome to WNYC today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on.
Professor, let me start with you and ask you for the origin of the cabaret laws, going back as far as you want, and then tell us what happened in the 90s.
Well, they were adopted in 1926. It was a licensing law for entertainment and music and dancing. It was based on the sense that people, as the city father said at the time, that people were running wild in nightclubs. And they talked about the jazz to which these people danced. And they said those people who are running wild need to have the check rein applied a little bit. So they adopted a law which required a license for any music or dance. And that stayed on the books essentially unaltered until the 80s, when some associates and I attacked the music provision on the basis of the free expression of the musicians, and that was successful. So the law was knocked out for music in the late 80s, and it continued with respect to social dancing. The problem with it is not only is it a licensing law, but it's also a zoning law. So that makes it a doubly difficult law to change, because you got to change not only the licensing, but you've got to work with the City Planning Commission to change the zoning provisions as well.
Right. So we go back to the 1920s, first of all, as you did, aimed at interracial jazz clubs, right?
Yes.
To put interracial jazz clubs out of business because people didn't like that mingling of the races.
There certainly was that. That was an undercurrent. There's no doubt about that.
And then in the 90s, Giuliani created a nightclub enforcement task force as part of his quality of life campaign.
Right.
Why was there a big push to get folks to stop dancing at that time?
Well, it's really hard to explain why there was ever a big push to get people to stop dancing. But actually, the enforcement of the law fluctuated depending on whether the city was flush with money. When the city was prosperous and there was extra money to enforce exotic ordinances like that. And that had something to do with it. The city was flush during Giuliani's years. If you take the 70s, there was all kinds of music and dance everywhere because there was no money to enforce. So also Giuliani, as you know, is a law and order kind of guy, and the law was on the books. So
was it,
among other laws that were going to be enforced, they were going to enforce that.
Was it related to noise control so the neighbors of these clubs wouldn't have to hear loud dance music into the late at night?
Well, that's the excuse they give. They say it's to control noise and crowding. But the thing is that a bar, a big popular bar, is just as noisy and crowded as a dance place. Maybe more so, you know, but certainly there isn't any automatic nexus between noise and dance as such. I mean, of course, a popular place may be noisy, but it could be noisy.
Well, music and dance. So if there were places in the 90s, you know, I know bars where there was a lot of dancing going on, or at least there was a jukebox and people could dance if they felt like it.
Yeah.
And then suddenly after these enforcements began to take place, the whole atmosphere changed, and there were small tables with candlelight, and, you know, the whole thing became sort of quieter. So maybe it had an effect on noise. But John McGarvey from Metropolis in Motion, talk about the effect of these cabaret laws and the enforcement since the 1990s on small venues, because you could get a cabaret license to allow people to dance. So who actually got those licenses, and who couldn't get those licenses where dancing had to stop?
At this point, it's mostly just the mega clubs that have licenses. We went down from in the high 20,000 or 12,000 licensed cabarets, only 181 in the city. And the New York Nightlife Association pretty much controls all the license permits that are going on right now. And there's no need for it. This is the only town in the world that actually makes dancing per se illegal.
Really?
So, yeah, it's a redundant law.
So this is not a typical urban noise control thing.
No. I think a lot of the noise issues popped up also after the smoking ban, when people were suddenly forced to go outside, and so the decibel rating increased from that.
Tell me those numbers that you gave again. I want to digest those for a second.
Sure. The law in 1961, there were 12,000 licensed cabarets, and in 2002, 276, and now we're down to 181.
Wow, that's an incredible reduction from, like, tons to almost zero.
And it's only just because of enforcement. The enforcement per se is actually just kind of an unfair tax burden on small venue owners.
So, Paul, as you mentioned, you filed lawsuits in the past on behalf of disgruntled dancers.
Yes.
And now here we have at least this report in the Daily News today that the Bloomberg administration is ready to reverse much of the cabaret licensing system as it exists.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of it?
Well, I hope it's going to happen, of course. But it's not an absolutely simple legal matter, because it requires not only eliminating the licensing requirement, but changing the zoning provisions. If there were nothing but a license and you could have a dance club anywhere in the city that you could have a restaurant, then I think there would be no problem. People would be willing, for the most part, to pay a license fee. But the problem is, in most zones in the city, you can't get a license at all. So you can never get a club. So they've got to do a two-pronged change. They've got to change the zoning laws, and they've got to change the licensing laws. And so that requires a coordinated effort by the mayor's office to do those two things at once, since the courts won't do it. So, it may happen, but they're going to have to think it through and decide how they want to revamp the zoning laws.
We can take a few phone calls on this at 646-778-3729. Bar owners, anyone else, 646-778-3729, or post a comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, 646-778-3729. And Max in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Max.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Well, I own two nightclubs in the West Chelsea area, and I understand Mayor Bloomberg is looking to change the legislation, but more importantly, something that you guys are not discussing is the power of these community boards that have been basically given fiefdom over granting liquor licenses and cabaret licenses by the SLA. They're the ones giving us the problem, because Giuliani came and cleaned up New York, okay? Most of the nightclubs with cabaret licenses are in the West Chelsea Meatpacking District. Before we got there was nothing there. Now that we're there, people want to move in there, and that's where you're having an enforcement issue. And the Quality of Life Commission comes in and conveniently closes. When they do their enforcement actions, they close on Friday night. They come in and close on Friday nights. Why? Because it destroys our business. And we lose Friday and Saturday. We get to a judge on Monday.
And the community board presumably represents residents in the area. So this is this a conflict between your businesses and people who live near your businesses?
Well, we're on 27th and 28th between 10th and 11th, so there isn't anyone living there. But the community boards obviously represent a huge amount of a huge swath. They take from West Chelsea all the way down to the meatpacking and then east. The problem is that community boards, now that these areas, which we were able to rent, say, 10 years ago for $20 a square foot, are now going for $400 a square foot.
Mm-hmm.
They want Starbucks and their
Greendale. And they don't want clubs like yours. Max, thank you for your call. I'm going to get another voice on. And it's Jim in Edison who says he lived through the New York dance craze and the guests are wrong. Lived in NoHo, right, Jim?
That's right, Brian. Yes, I lived through it. We had a dance club right next to us. The situation was out of control before the regulation. It went on until dawn, dancing, you know, particularly on the weekends. The drug scene, which nobody has mentioned, was promoted by all that, and it just made life unlivable.
But if I may, dancing per se is not the cause of those issues. Those are actual other concerns that the other laws on the books address.
Well, that's really not an answer. I mean, the situation, the streets were blocked with people who couldn't get into these clubs. People wouldn't go away. They stayed until the following morning. I lived through it. I experienced it.
So that's the other side of the argument. And here is a DJ who we know, DJ Reka, calling from Brooklyn. Hey, DJ Reka.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I think these laws should be banned. They've affected a lot of marginalized communities that only had small bars and spaces. People can't access mega clubs all the time with bottle service. It's the most ridiculous law in the world, and I think it should be getting rid of it. It really affected a lot of small bars in the East Village that had to close down, that were getting harassed by cops. And I think the noise issue and the smoking issue, they're all getting conflated and blaming, being attributed to dancing. But dancing is a fundamental right.
Well, what do you say to the last caller who talked about, and Rake, I'll get it from you, then I'll get it from the guests. Did you hear the last caller?
Yeah, I did hear him. I mean, that's an issue of crowd control and too many people on the streets. That doesn't mean it's too many people going to a place that's popular. It's not about dancing. It's about too many people in a space, and that needs to be regulated in a different way. But people should not be prevented from moving to music.
DJ Reka, well known for, well, what space are you using now?
I'm in a cabaret licensed facility at SOB's the first Thursday of the month.
You're still doing the Bhangra?
Yes, we're still doing the Bhangra.
All right.
First and third Thursdays.
At SOB's first and third Thursdays. Thanks a lot for calling in. Paul, were you trying to get in on this? I know you're a tap dancer as well, so I don't know if you had something to say to that previous caller.
I did, but not about tap dancing, but the DJ asserts that...
But wait, what do your downstairs neighbors think about having a tap dancer?
I never tap dance at home.
Only on the rug.
The courts have asserted that there isn't a right to social dancing. I mean, that's the legal problem, is they say there's a right to perform dance for an audience, but there is no constitutional First Amendment or any other kind of free expression right to do social dancing. And Norman Siegel and I brought the case based upon the right to social dance on the basis we thought it was a free expression right. I have never understood the court's point of view, but unfortunately, the constitutional law is not very favorable.
And here's a post on the comments page that says, a promoter's perspective. The cabaret laws, like so many regulations governing bars and other nightlife establishments, are utilized selectively by the police to harass owners, promoters, artists, and patrons when no other grounds are available. Even with their removal, the police will continue to selectively enforce whatever obscure codes they choose. So in our last minute, it looks like, according to this Daily News report, that the Bloomberg administration is going to revise the cabaret laws so that dancing is much more widely available in the city. And John, take our last minute here and say to these other callers who express concern, what's the right compromise so that freedom of expression and just fun, having, you know, going out to a bar and being able to dance, can coexist with the neighbor's right to live in a not overly noisy environment?
Well, other cities have had no problem with this, you know, through other methods of enforcement. And just the ability for people to get together at a small place, and swing dancers or other groups, Zydeco people, you know, suddenly wanting to, you know, spontaneously do a little movement, that should not be regulated.
The river dancers, we can bring them into it too, and the tap dancers. All right. Well, we'll see what Mayor Bloomberg comes up with. Paul Cheveny, we have 20 seconds if you want to add something from a legal perspective.
Well, this would be a great change. It would be a great blow for liberty.
Paul Cheveny, NYU Law School professor. He's the author of Jazz and the Cabaret Laws in New York City. And as you've heard, he's brought lawsuits for the right to dance in New York City. John McGarvey is with the group Metropolis in Motion. We'll see what Mayor Bloomberg really changes after this report that he's going to change the cabaret laws in the Daily News today. Thanks a lot, both of you, for coming on with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.